Who uses the water in the Klamath Basin and how will be an issue again this year, and not just because it's another drought year, but because the water that flows into Upper Klamath Lake, then down into the Klamath River, past several dams, and ultimately into the ocean has more promises on it than can be delivered in many years. From the Klamath Irrigation Project that waters farmland to several troubled fish species, there simply won't be enough surface water to satisfy all the demands. Let's talk about this with Felice Pace. He's been active in environmental issues in the region for many years and is currently the water chair of the North Group Redwood Chapter of the Sierra Club. And he joins us with his views on what's happening with Klamath water this year and generally. Felice, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
So, same here. Let's make it clear up front. Do your views on water use, are they your own? Or are they the views of the Sierra Club group to which you're attached, or a mixture of both?
Well, I would say a mixture of both. I can point out the Sierra Club has several chapters that that have pieces of the Klamath Basin, including the Oregon chapter. And we do have a position, and I can represent that position. But mostly I'll be talking about, unless I specify that it's a Sierra Club position, it'll be my own views. I've lived in the basin since 1976. And mostly up in the Skye River Basin, and I've been spending a lot of time in the Upper Basin and working on Klamath River issues since 1986.
So you've certainly had a long time to get an idea of what happens year in, year out in the Klamath Basin. Even without severe drought, would you say there are generally issues with water allocations and its availability in the basin?
Well, yes, even when we don't have drought, it's not clear that we, for example, the Klamath River and the Klamath refuges and the environment generally, but those two issues. The Klamath River is right now getting minimum flows that are sufficient, supposedly, under the biological opinion on operation of the Klamath project to take care of the coho. But we have a situation in the Klamath where we have fish disease epidemics that sometimes kill adult fish, a lot of adult fish in 2002, but every year kill a lot of the juvenile fish that are trying to migrate down the Klamath River. So we don't have flows sufficient to restore our fisheries even in, and to get our river healthy even in non-drought years, in average years. In very good years when there's plenty of snowpack, then there's enough water to go around for all the allocations and, as you say, promises that have been made.
So when you think about all the ways in which water gets used in the Klamath River Basin, it is pretty extensive. You remind us about the fact that there are not only irrigation efforts going on, particularly in the upper basin in the Klamath Falls area, but wildlife refuges as well, some of which end up drying up over the course of some years, don't they?
Well, the wildlife refuges are dried up right now. And particularly Lower Klamath Refuge, which was the first refuge created in 1908, first refuge for water birds, too, waterfowl. And it's going to get no water this year. Meanwhile, the irrigators within the Klamath Project, and by the way, those the two refuges, three refuges actually, Upper Klamath Lake Refuge, above Upper Klamath Lake, right on the border of the lake, Lower Klamath Refuge, where Lower Klamath Lake used to be, and Tule Lake, where Tule Lake Refuge, which is about 10% of the original Tule Lake. Lower Klamath, those are located within the Klamath Project. But this year, the Klamath Project irrigators will fully irrigate with groundwater, making up the difference that's not available from surface flows. And that groundwater is going to be paid for by, the pumping of it is going to be paid for by the U.S. taxpayers.
That's the groundwater pumping that's organized by QAPA, the Klamath Water and Power Authority?
That's right. And QAPA, which wasn't stated last week when you talked to their executive director, Holly Cannon, but it's fully funded by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and therefore by the taxpayers. Holly operates more like a lobbyist for the irrigators, who are the people that make up his board. And, you know, there's a myth out there that there's all these family farms. Well, most of the top quality agricultural land in the Klamath Project is controlled by eight very large growers who lease a lot of land from old folks whose kids didn't come back, who used to have 160-acre homesteads out there. And, you know, they dominate both the politics of the basin and the agriculture in the basin.
Let's, you know, this is a chance for us to kind of come back to square one and look at a lot of basic terms in the Klamath Basin. The Klamath Project, for example, is the irrigation project that serves a lot of these agricultural areas, and this was created by the federal government back in the early 20th century, wasn't it?
1905. So they, you know, as you, your listeners, many of your listeners will know, the Klamath Basin went through an adjudication, and we now have an adjudication decree from the state of Oregon. And the water is being managed according to that decree right now.
That was two years ago, right, that adjudication?
The Klamath Project has the top water rights next to the Klamath Tribes, which have time immemorial rights.
All right, so number one is the Klamath Tribes, then the Klamath Project beyond that.
That's right.
All right. And you have mentioned where Lower Klamath Lake used to be, which is another fascinating thing for people to look at when they look at older maps. It's like there was an Upper Klamath Lake and a Lower Klamath Lake. What happened to Lower Klamath Lake?
Well, Lower, when the federal government came in with the reclamation, as they did in other parts of the West, they didn't reclaim desert lands. They really drained the lake and the lakes and the wetlands. And those lake bottoms have very rich soils. That's become the prime agricultural land. So Lower Klamath Lake is really, the refuge is really just a remnant of what that lake was. And what used to happen in the Klamath Basin is really fascinating because where Keno Dam is at the bottom of the upper basin, right where it enters the Cascade Canyon, the river enters the Cascade Canyon, there was a volcanic sill that acted like a dam, and it backed up water during the wintertime when there were big flows. Water backed up into Upper Klamath Lake through what's called the Klamath Straits, And that buffered the Klamath River from floods, naturally buffered the Klamath River from floods. It also did a lot of sequestration of phosphorus. It's a natural nutrient in the water from the upper basin from those old lakes. So it probably helped water quality in the Klamath River. Some of us think that restoring Lower Klamath Lake would be the key to restoring the river once again.
Restoring it in the sense of taking out the dikes and turning the farmland back into lakebed?
Yeah, and that would have to be by purchase from willing sellers because it's private. A lot of it's private land. But the Klamath Lake, as opposed to the Tule Lake Basin, which is in the Lost River Basin, as opposed to Lower Klamath Lake, the ag land there is salty, and so it's a relatively low-value ag land. It's mostly used for cattle and for grains, as opposed to the high-value crops like onions, mint, and potatoes that are grown over in the Tule Lake Basin.
We're talking about Klamath Water with Felice Pace, who's the water chair of the North Group Redwood Chapter of the Sierra Club and an environmental activist in the region for many years, living since 1976 in the basin. You can join us on the exchange with questions or comments, 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, 800-838-3760, by email jx@jeffnet.org. You did listen apparently to our conversation about the groundwater pumping with Holly Cannon last week. You've got a bit of an issue with the groundwater pumping itself, and what's the basic set of concerns there?
Well, there's two basic concerns. One is mining of groundwater, and Holly Cannon actually mentioned that the Oregon DEQ has estimated that 15,000 acre feet of groundwater could be safely removed. From the basin without lowering the water table this year from the Lost River Basin. But the plans of that Holly mentioned of the Bureau of Reclamation is to subsidize pumping on 45,000 acre feet of water. So in other words, we're going to further lower the water table in the lower Lost River Basin, which is the Tule Lake area. And the town of Tule Lake, for example, they haven't complained because they're in the middle of this agricultural community. They are an agricultural community, but they've had to lower their drinking water well a couple of times because the massive pumping of groundwater, mining of groundwater, really has lowered the water table. And USGS has reports out on this. So, you know, that's my second problem is why are the American taxpayers being made to pay so that these guys can pump water? and fully irrigate. You know, everyone else in the basin is feeling the pinch. The farmers up above Tule Lake, they're not going to have the full allocation of water. The river is on the lowest allocation of water. The refuges are getting no water. Yet one group of irrigators, these federal irrigators, are going to have all the water they want, paid for by the taxpayers. That just seems not right. You know, my feeling and what would be a real balance and a real solution in the basin is a solution where everyone that's a water user shares in the pain when we have a water year like this where the water is just not available.
All right, but we're talking them pumping groundwater. Granted, you know, all water is going to end up in a lot of the same places, but are they affecting surface water by taking groundwater too?
No, not in this case, because in this case it's very deep groundwater. In the volcanic areas, which, you know, the Cascades and east of the Cascades are volcanic, the groundwater tends to be in channels and tends to be pretty deep. So they are not affecting some places where groundwater is more shallow and you start pumping it, you're going to affect the springs. And therefore the flows in the streams and therefore the flows in the rivers. But in this case, this is sort of fossil groundwater that's way, way down underneath the ground.
And not recoverable? Is that, that seems to be the point when people talk about groundwater as fossil water.
Well, it will recover, but it will take a long time to recover. And in order for it to begin to recover, we're going to have to stop pumping more than is coming in. So, you know, it's just like a little bowl of water with water pouring out one end and in the other. You know, if you lower, if you take too much out of the actual bowl, you're not going to be able to get back up to the full level.
So rather than pump groundwater, you'd rather just see a lot more land go idle this year?
Well, that's right. And what the Bureau does is it offers payments. The Bureau of Reclamation and therefore the federal taxpayers, we offer payments to these irrigators if they voluntarily idle their land. But many do not because they can get the federal government to pay for pumping groundwater. And in fact, some of those wells, the Tule Lake Irrigation District, which is the most highest value ag land in the bottom of the former Tule Lake, years and years of lake sediments that make that land so rich. Back in 2001, the state of California gave them six very large irrigation wells right on the California-Oregon border, just on the California side, where groundwater at that time was not regulated. We now have a groundwater bill, and someday we will regulate groundwater. But then we didn't, and so the legislature, in a budget deal, gave them the wells, the pumps, all the infrastructure, the pipes, so they are able to really exploit the groundwater. That's when we started seeing the town of Tule Lake having to lower its drinking water well and other effects like that.
We're talking Klamath Water with Felice Pace. He's the water chair of the North Group Redwood Chapter of the Sierra Club and a longtime resident of the Klamath Basin. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region by email jx@jeffnet.org. Felice, we've been reading a fair amount of your stuff on Klamath Blog, and it's clear from the work you've done over the years and the writing about it that it's not just a matter of questioning practices, but questioning premises as well. And, I mean, all things being equal, would you like to see the Klamath Reclamation Project go away?
No, I don't think it needs to go away. I just think, you know, federal projects, water projects, irrigation projects all over the West have to become part of the larger community in the sense of not being an irrigation elite that gets water when everybody else is suffering, but, you know, it shares in the management of water in the basin in a more equal kind of way. I don't think it needs to go away. It just needs to get into balance. And one thing that I think folks are not generally aware of, because there's been a lot of misinformation about it, is that now that we have an adjudication in Oregon, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, the federal government, holds those 1905 water rights within the Klamath Project. It has the right to change the purpose and use of that water through a process with the state of Oregon. It can change the place where it uses that water. It can change the purpose. So there is nothing right now preventing the U.S. government from providing the refuges with a fair share of the water, that the Bureau has available to it. That amount of water is limited by the need to take care of the endangered Kuptuin Schwam, the Lost River, and Short-Nosed Sucker in Suckers in Upper Klamath Lake, and they're in Tule Lake in the Lost River as well. And the coho salmon, those ESA needs need to be taken care of, and they stand for the needs of the other species in those water bodies as well. With that amount of water that they have available each year, they can allocate it pretty much as they please with the agreement of the state of Oregon. So if they wanted to balance the water and provide the refuges with a share of the available water, the Bureau of Reclamation has the ability to do that.
Because they hold the right. They're so high up the chain.
Right. Yeah. That's right. They didn't used to before the adjudication came out. The other thing about the adjudication that I think is very important for listeners to understand and appreciate is that the state of Oregon did recognize the Klamath tribe's rights to streams inflowing into Upper Klamath Lake, but it denied their claim to flows in the Klamath River below Upper Klamath Lake. Those would be flows for salmon because they were a salmon people as well. The salmon used to come up in there. So the tribe in the Upper Basin Agreement, the latest water deal, has agreed to give up those rights if they get the land base, the timber land base that they want to get into the timber business.
And there was some private land that got sold to somebody other than the Klamath tribe recently. I noticed it was a bit of a dust-up.
That's right. And now they're talking about the Wainema National Forest, which originally was part of the reservation. And the Klamath tribes, like many tribes in the long history of our sad dealings with the indigenous Americans, they were terminated. Their status as a tribe was terminated during the Eisenhower administration. And the land that was their reservation, a lot of that land became the Wainema National Forest. So now they're talking in the deal, in the federal legislation that would make the Klamath water deals work, that they're talking about returning a portion of the Wainema National Forest to the tribes as part of that deal.
Which we'll discuss with the tribes on a future program. And this is a good chance to pivot to the Klamath agreements and the discussion about taking out the four major dams on the main stem of the Klamath itself. Are you in favor of that, can we assume?
I'm in favor of taking out the dams. I'm not in favor of the Klamath agreements and linking the taking out of the dams to these water deals. What happened in the FERC process when the PacifiCorps that owns not just those four dams that are in the legislation scheduled to be removed, but a fifth dam, which is Keno Dam, that we at the bottom of the Upper Klamath Basin, right where it enters the Cascade Canyon. In that FERC process, an administrative law judge ruled that in order to have those dams relicensed, the company would have to build fish ladders. The cost of those fish ladders, and not even considering the cost to comply with the Clean Water Act, which the dams would also have to do under a new license. That cost was such that the company would lose $24 million a year, every year, because the cost of generating the power would be greater than the cost than the amount of money they would make. So those dams are a non-performing. If they were relicensed, they would be what we call in economics, my training is in economics, a non-performing asset. Mm-hmm. And what corporations do with non-performing assets is they try to get rid of them. They're not creating any profits, so they will get rid of them. And really, this legislation that Senator Wyden has, it's a sweetheart deal for that big corporation because it would take those dams that are there, they own. And it would transfer them to a dam removal entity, and that would almost certainly be the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which would then decommission the dams.
So the money, again,
if anybody knows anything about the Army Corps of Engineers, they know it's not a very, very efficient organization. So I think the cost. The alternative, though, is to go into the FERC process, and in the FERC process to have an agreement with PacifiCorp by which they remove that non-performing asset, which they own.
So you're saying it ultimately ends up being taxpayer money to take out the dams rather than the dam owner taking them out?
Yeah, exactly. And actually, the cost of decommissioning would almost certainly be passed on to the ratepayers, PacifiCorp's ratepayers.
It shows up on our bills already. Yeah, they're line items in the bill if you look at them from Pacific Power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the share of the cost of decommissioning is in the bill.
All right, a lot of work ahead. I mean, is this going to be a fairly tough summer, you think, in the Klamath Basin?
Well, it is, because we already have a situation below Iron Gate Dam where we have disease organisms and a disease epidemic in these salmon diseases, which is where that progression usually is by about July or August. So everybody's very concerned. In fact, the Bureau of Reclamation is even considering putting a little bit of extra water down the Klamath River in the spring to try to flush out those disease organisms.
All right. I'm sure there'll be lots more things to talk about over the course of this season, this summer, as it looks a very dry one in the Klamath Basin. Felice Pace is water chair of the North Group Redwood Chapter of the Sierra Club. Felice, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Take care.